This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So the story goes that the young Charles Dickens visited London as an 8-year-old boy in the care of his uncle. They became separated by the crowds, but with the help of a young gentleman, the terrors of this unknown city would become a part of his new world of fiction.
Uncle! Uncle! Gog and Magog, great guardians of London. They're not real giants after all. They're not flesh and blood. They're made of stone, lifeless.
Who's this calling us lifeless, Brother Gog?
Who's this rousing us from sleep, Brother Magog?
Looks like a boy.
This is no place for boys.
Oh, Gog and Magog, mighty giants, please help me.
No business of ours.
Find your own way.
Leave us to our sleep,
else the city alderman will put you on trial.
And your head will be severed from your body for your gross insolence.
Be off with you, boy!
You're listening to Bookmark on The Bigger Picture. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and this is Invisible Cities, the show in which I take you on a journey to all of those places, both real and imagined, to all of those places you can only find within the pages of a good book. I'm taking you back to London this week because there's just so much to see and do there. With Pepys and Conan Doyle, with Conrad and Orwell, you could take a saunter through its streets with Neil Gaiman and Ian McEwan and Zadie Smith, or experience the diaspora with the hundreds of Indian and Pakistani authors, the displaced Yanks and Howard Jacobson's Jews. Or maybe just curl up with your favourite Dickens. London was, after all, his muse. Its vastness would inspire and challenge him. It would provide him with opportunity for both literature and adventure. And it should afford you the same as well.
The peculiar character of these streets, and the close resemblance each one bears to its neighbour, by no means tends to decrease the bewilderment in which the unexperienced wayfarer through the dials finds himself involved. He traverses streets of dirty, straggling houses, with now and then an unexpected court composed of buildings as ill-proportioned and deformed as the half-naked children that wallow in the kennels.
Dickens, who was born over 200 years ago, wrote a long shelf of novels, 14 in all, not counting The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which lay half-finished at his death. They sit plump and bursting with life, spilling over with the chaos of existence itself. Now, it's most likely that at the heart of your favourite Dickens novel lies a 19th century London that is seething, smoking, overcrowded, and in a state of vulgar contradiction. Now, just imagine Dickens himself walking in the midst of all of that, a small, brisk figure on a dark and dirty street.
Here and there, a little dark chandler's shop, with a cracked bell hung up behind the door to announce the entrance of a customer, or betray the presence of some young gentleman in whom a passion for shop tills has developed itself at an early age. Others, as if for support, against some handsome, lofty building, which usurps the place of a low, dingy public house. Long rows of broken and patched windows expose plants that may have flourished when the dials were built, in vessels as dirty as the dials themselves, and shops for the purchase of rags, bones, old iron, and kitchen stuff vie in cleanliness with the bird fanciers and rabbit dealers, which one might fancy so many arks, but for the irresistible conviction that no bird in its proper senses who was permitted to leave one of them would ever come back again.
In Night Walks, again, he walks through the city streets that he knew so well, but in the strangeness of the nighttime, when it's dark and empty. And so London is somehow transformed by seeing it in those moments. And it's also transformed, of course, by his writing style, which, like those choices that he makes of when to visit the city, his writing style also defamiliarizes it, makes it different from what his first readers would have immediately appreciated.
Dickens was a man ahead of his time. In his early writings, in The Sketches, Gin Shops and Scotland Yard, he laments the gentrification of traditional areas into trendy metropolitan sites. In City of the Absent, he talks about revitalizing abandoned churchyards into places of life and love. He triumphs in showing the reader the wonders of the urban world that so many of us take for granted. Job Trotter, having delivered his important news of Mr. Pickwick to Perker, the lawyer, in the Pickwick Papers, would go directly to Covent Garden Market to spend the night in a vegetable basket. In Oliver Twist, Bill Sykes wonders fiercely at Fagin, and I quote, "What makes you take so much pains about one chalk-faced kid when you know there are 50 boys snoozing about Common Garden every night, and you might pick and choose from?" "Because they're of no use to me, my dear," replied the Jew, with some confusion. "Not worth the taking. Their looks convict them when they get into trouble, and I lose them all." And then there's Master Humphrey, the narrator at the beginning of The Old Curiosity Shop, who describes the market. At sunrise, too, in the spring or summer, when the fragrance of sweet flowers is in the air, overpowering even the wholesome themes of last night's debauchery, and driving the dusky thrush whose cage has hung outside a garret window all night long, half mad with joy.
It's also a London that is pregnant with change. Dickens was an advocate of progress, but often had a very ambivalent response to it. So on the one hand, there's a new police force that he admires. The new children's hospital is a great institution that he admires. He is impressed with some factory conditions in East London. And yet at the same time, there's a kind of sadness, almost a melancholy for things that are passing away. So he notes in one of the early sketches the demise of theatres around Drury Lane. He's also frequently interested, as he is in his novels, in the decline of earlier modes of transport. So more than once in The Uncommercial Traveller, we encounter a former stagecoach driver who's now without an occupation. And so as supportive as Dickens often was of progress, The Uncommercial Traveller is also a document for a London that was passing away.
And in Martin Chuzzlewit and in David Copperfield and in Our Mutual Friend, and the same would go for Chelsea and Hampstead and Finchley, so much so that a Dickensian A to Z of London would truly be something to behold. One of the most amazing things about Dickens's London is just how much of it has managed to survive the march of time and progress. Indeed, at first glance, you might feel tempted to dismiss the modern streets and buildings as not being worth a second glance, and you might hurry by or along them, en route to wherever your ultimate destination might be. And yet, if you scratch the surface, if you duck down the side streets, or delve into the hidden courtyards and passageways that are scattered around this modern metropolis, surprises aplenty await your discovery. And you will be surprised by the number of Dickensian locations that such perambulations might uncover.
The season beloved of poets and writers. It may have been in the spring when Charles Dickens stole up Johnson's Court to post his first literary effort. It was at 48 Doughty Street that Dickens lived during his early married life when he was writing Pickwick Papers, Oliver Twist and Nicholas Nickleby. The house is now a museum dedicated to the great writer. St. Dunstan's chimes played a great part in the story of Trotty Veck. It's mentioned in Mr. Pickwick's contribution to Master Humphrey's Clock. You'll remember the home of Mrs. Bardell in Goswell Street, with her boy Tommy and her friends Mrs. Raddle and Mrs. Cuppins, that good lady is setting out for the Spaniards Inn at Hampstead.
You've been listening to Invisible Cities, bookmark on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
But as that's entirely changed, we've taken the liberty of giving Sam a temporary job as Boots at the George. Wren's great cathedral, St. Paul's, is often mentioned by Dickens. Close by was Doctors Commons, where Tony Weller bought a marriage license. Near these steps at London Bridge, Nancy promised to tell the story of Oliver Twist to Mr. Brownlow, but she didn't know that Noah Claypole was in hiding. She has come to keep the appointment. Holborn has changed since Oliver Twist was written, but St. Andrew's Church is much the same as it was in the days of Bill Sykes and Oliver and Fagin.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.